So I'm Mike Dietz. I'm going to be talking about Choir, which is a project that we designed over at the Rice University Computer Security Lab. I'd like to thank my co-authors before I get into this. Thanks, guys. So before I get into everything, I want to talk a little bit about how Android is different than other operating systems we might have seen. First of all, applications in Android are separated based on their Unix user ID that they get in install time. This is a way to separate applications, and it actually gives us all of these traditional Unix UID protections like file system permission bits that we've had for a long time. And then applications talk to each other using these binder IPC messages that pretty much the last three talks have been talking about. So there's this overarching idea in Android of this application segregation. And this is very different than something like the iOS App Store, where we're protecting applications from each other by making sure that only vetted applications get into this ecosystem. In Android, we're dealing more with protecting applications from each other by trying to instill some OS protections and trying to segregate applications. So in theory, this means that your application should be very slick, very minimalistic. They do one thing well and only ask for what they need. They should look like that. But in practice, applications tend to look more like this. You've got a lot of third-party libraries, fourth-party libraries, as William talked about. So I guess the question becomes, why do we have all of these third and fourth-party libraries? And most of the answer is we want to make money on Android applications. So some of the bigger examples of third-party libraries are mobile ads and mobile payments. And there are a lot out there. Here's just a sampling, and you'd have more, but I got tired of copying logos. So why is this a bad thing that we have all these third-party applications that share the same user ID space, or third-party libraries that share the same user ID space as the application that they're living with? Well, let me set up this example for you. Assume I have this application SimDroid Lite that just is it's a simple game. It displays things to the user. It doesn't have to request any permissions. Suddenly, I want to monetize this app, so I decide to drop in AdMob. And AdMob says, oh, I need you to request the GPS and internet permissions for me. In addition to that, maybe I want to use PayPal to say, oh, you can upgrade to SimDroid Pro from SimDroid Lite, so you'll be able to pay for it and, you know, pay up. So PayPal also requests two other permissions, so it requests internet and phone state. So this is what you as a developer see, that these third-party libraries are asking for these permissions. But a user that's trying to install your application sees something more like this, where they just see, well, this application wants GPS information, wants internet, and wants phone state, so it can track me, it knows where I am, and it knows who I am to some degree. It can de-anonymize me and actually send this information out into the ether. Additionally, you have this other problem of these third-party libraries could introduce bugs. And to the user, it appears that this SimDroid Lite program has crashed. And it could be that AdMob has crashed. It could be that PayPal has crashed. So this is a big issue. And it's actually a big issue that has affected a very big name, Pandora. So Pandora actually got in trouble because AdMob was requesting GPS permission. And even if Pandora wasn't doing anything evil, wasn't actually taking your GPS information and sending it back to themselves or sending it to AdMob, it's perceived to be evil because of the third-party libraries that are requesting these permissions or asking it to request permissions on its behalf. So there's this idea of mutual distrust between applications and libraries. Apps don't really trust libraries, and libraries don't really want to trust applications. So this issue flows both ways. Libraries can be manipulated by the hosting application, and if we know anything about web security, we know this because click fraud is a big deal, and it's a lot of the same ideas that your ad provider doesn't trust the website that it's being hosted in. So maybe there's a really easy solution to this. Maybe we just split libraries apart into separate applications. So we split everything apart and we say, well, now my stupid little game that only requests nothing can actually request nothing, and that AdMob actually requests GPS internet on its own behalf rather than acting through me. So maybe we should split apart these applications into, or split apart these libraries into separate applications. Well, this introduces a host of other problems, mainly confused deputy attacks that Adrian just talked about. I'm going to quickly gloss over it, so don't tune out. So the general idea is that if Angry Birds requests GPS information from Android, and it doesn't actually have that permission, Android will just flat out say no. But Angry Birds can get around this by using an application that blindly forwards its request for the GPS access and actually has the permission as well to access GPS. So Angry Birds can ask it. It'll say, oh yeah, I trust your Angry Birds. I'll forward this on. and forwards it on Android, in which case Android says, yeah, sure, you can have the GPS permission, or the GPS information. So, as I said, Adrienne just presented on why these attacks really exist. She found five system applications that are actually vulnerable and a host of other applications on the Android market that are at risk because they do this blind forwarding or are at risk of doing this blind forwarding. And what I'm introducing is this splitting up of applications, and this might even enable more confused deputy attacks. So obviously we have to consider how do we prevent these confused deputy attacks when we want to split up applications into their own separate context spaces. So I'm kind of reaching towards a design goal here. And the design goal is we want to enable applications to truly be separate, that you should be separate from your library and that you should be able to talk to it via IPC. And we've got two sub-goals, or I guess caveats at this point, two things we have to think about. First of which is that we need to prevent confused deputy attacks. Secondly, we actually need to protect data provenance and integrity. As these call chains get bigger and bigger, your risk of having a man in the middle that manipulates your data is very, very high. So we need to consider this. So I'm going to talk about Quire, which is the system that we designed over at Rice, and it tries to address some of these issues. So I'm going to talk first about our approach to confused deputy attacks. The general idea is that we want to look at the entire call chain before granting access to a security-sensitive resource like the GPS or a user's contact list. So Android already gives us a little bit of this. It gives us a way to unambiguously determine the direct caller that called an application. So an application can query Android and say, who called me? Give me their user ID. Give me their process ID. But what about earlier callers in the chain? What about a long call chain where we might have this confused deputy attack where a malicious application is trying to mask another application acting for it by saying, oh, well, the call chain drops off after one. I just need to make it two, and then I win. So we introduced this idea of provenance-carrying IPC. And the main idea is that an application can protect itself by quoting the application or call chain that led up to its execution. And I'm not really pulling this out of the ether. This is something that was proposed in Taos in 1993 as far as allowing quoting as a way to actually drop privilege. So the key point here is that this quoting actually does only drop privilege of an application that chooses to quote its antecedent call chain. So what this means is that B quoting, when B quotes A, B's saying, oh, no, don't do it because you trust me. Make sure you trust whoever called me as well before you go through with this action. So I'm actually going to throw this out there that we don't need to do any crypto to make this work. And I'm going to defend it after I take a little digression to talk about stack inspection as well. So we've already discussed stack inspection in Adrienne's presentation, but I'm going to go over it a little bit. So stack inspection is performed on each method call. It's actually very invasive. Compiler developers don't like this because you have to hack on the compiler to make this work, and it gets in the way of a lot of the things that the compilers people want to optimize for. So stack inspection is kind of frowned upon in this respect. What we want to do is actually apply stack inspection semantics to the IPC barrier. So when applications talk to other applications, we're actually using these stack inspection semantics to reduce privilege. But at the same time, we're not modifying the Dalvik VM, and the sharper eyed of you will see that there's an asterisk there, and I will get back to that later because there is one caveat. So as I said before, we don't need crypto to do this. And this is because evil applications can lie, but it really doesn't matter. So why doesn't it matter? Well, let's consider a normal scenario where a trusted application that has GPS permission chooses to call the location provider and request the GPS. Well, the way that this is going to work is that the location provider gets the request, it checks the permission of its direct caller using this Android tool that we already have to check the UID, and then says, yes, you have this permission, therefore I'll hand out the GPS information to you. An evil app that tries to do exactly the same thing will hit the location provider. The location provider looks up the UID and says, oh, this UID doesn't actually have permission to do this. I'm not going to allow it. So this is getting back to our confused deputy attack that I talked about before. So in our system, the evil app would call the trusted application. The trusted application decides, I don't actually trust this guy. I'm going to quote the my direct caller to the location provider and actually build up this call chain. So the trusted application that has GPS permission quotes the direct caller and builds up this call chain to the location provider. The location provider receives the request, checks the entire call chain, and then rejects it because two has revealed that, the trusted application has revealed that it's actually the evil application that tried to call me. So An important thing to think about is that this doesn't actually change if you go through multiple hops. You can't add more to the call chain and hope to ever increase privilege. So this evil application could call through many applications to get to the location provider, and it doesn't matter because as long as the call chain is being passed forward, this evil application is found out. So at this point, you might be frustrated if you're the developer of this evil application that's trying to be malicious. So you might decide, oh, I'm going to forge a call chain. That's got to be the way to defeat this. But again, because quoting only reduces privilege, you don't actually gain anything by quoting. So I'm going to talk now about our idea for how... I'm going to talk now about these this idea called verifiable statements. And this arose from the idea that sometimes we want something that feels a lot like a digital signature, but doesn't really cost as much. So sometimes we want apps to be able to communicate in an authenticated way, even though everybody's lying all over the place in this ecosystem. So we've rejected digital signatures as too costly. So what does that leave us with? And the answer is either an HMAC or we actually use the Android operating system to somehow handle these IPCs or handle these authenticated statements that we want to send. And here are some numbers that we found experimentally for actually comparing the speed of these. And there's a pretty obvious answer for what we want to do. So we're going to go with HMACs as the way that we actually want to implement this. So here's a simple scenario that I've set up in which there's this application Droid game that has an ad provider that it wants to work with. We've implemented this authority manager in the operating system that is going to provide some of the things that we need to actually make this entire macking system work. So when Droid game actually wants to talk with this ad provider, this is what it's going to do. First of all, it's going to rely on the operating system to help create and verify these signed statements that it wants to create. So the first thing it does is it actually talks to the authority manager within the OS and says, give me a shared secret. Register a shared secret between my user ID and put it in a map and return it to me. So the authority manager at this point returns the shared secret, and Droid Game can cache this and then reuse it to communicate to any other application that it wants to. We're actually going to use the OS later to verify these signed statements that it's creating. And it's important to note that we actually we only create the shared statement on the first IPC call that this Droid Game application wants to make, that it's not actually recreated on subsequent calls, so we don't actually suffer the slowdown of creating a shared secret every time. So when Droid Game actually wants to create this shared statement, what it's going to do is compute an HMAC using this shared secret that it shared between itself and the OS over the message contents of the IPC that it's sending across. And this HMAC computation is very fast once this shared secret has been cached. So it sends this across to the ad provider. And what the ad provider is going to want to do at some point is actually verify this statement. So it's going to do this. Well, so the ad provider doesn't actually have the key that Droid Game used to create this HMAC statement. It needs to rely on the OS to actually do the verification. So it's going to do an IPC to the operating system, and it's going to pass the statement, the HMAC, and the author to the operating system. This is everything that it needs to actually compute the symmetric operation to confirm that this data hasn't been tampered with, and also confirm the provenance of where it came from. You can unambiguously say, this came from Droid Game because I know it was signed with that shared secret. So it's important to note that, again, this data integrity and this provenance last across multiple communication hops on IPC. So I can go through one hop or I can go through eight hops. And in the end, the endpoint application or any application on this call chain can actually verify that this statement is correct, that it can be verified. So I built up these two constructs that we want to use to make IPC better in Android. So what can we actually build with this? And this is where things get really interesting. And I'd like to thank my co-authors, Yule, Shashi, and Anhe, for really helping out with building these applications that make use of this. So the first is a secure mobile payment system. And the way we built this is we actually thought about what the trust issues are for current Android mobile payment systems. And the first of which is, well, we need some way to create a signed purchase order so an payee application can create a purchase order and know that the payment application that's actually going to fulfill it hasn't modified this order in flight. So we also need the user to be able to endorse this payment to make sure that the payee application isn't just creating it on the fly and with no input from the user so that they're trying to steal money from them. And finally, we need this last bullet point, which is make this meaningful to a remote payment server that is not on the phone. So everything we've built up to this point is only useful when you're on the phone. When you jump off, you actually have to go through some hoops to make this work. And the way we might try to do this is maybe we'll put some trust in the Android operating system to actually speak for applications to remote services, that will build up this little bit of trusted OS code that's actually going to do this for us. So we actually implemented this, and the reference implementation is called PayBuddy, written by my co-author Yuli. So the idea here is that we want this signed purchase order. Well, I've already described how we're going to do this. We've got these verifiable statements that can be verified by any application later down the road, and we can actually use this to create this this statement that has data integrity. So the payee application will create one of those, send it across to this PayBuddy application that lives in a separate application user ID space. And PayBuddy's actually going to pop out to the user and say, hey, do you accept or reject this? Upon the user accepting it, it's going to wrap this up in an RPC call, which goes to this new construct we built in the OS called the network provider. And so what this does in a nutshell is it translates IPC on the phone to RPC that is meaningful to remote endpoints off of the phone. So how does it do this? Well, first of all, it's going to go through this verification process where it's going to ask the OS authority manager, does this verifiable statement actually check out? So upon the authority manager saying, yes, this is actually correct, we're going to zoom out a little bit and jump off to what happens when we try to go out on the internet and hit this remote PayBuddy service with the contents of what's on the phone. So we could just send this data across, but it's meaningless to this remote PayBuddy service. Everything that we've built up thus far is only useful on the phone. We're dealing in user IDs. We're dealing in things that only make sense in this particular phone context. So we have to somehow resolve this into something that's more meaningful to this remote service. So the way that we do that is we actually build up a bit of a software TPM that allows the OS to speak for PayBuddy to this remote endpoint of the service. And we basically trust that there is an OS private key that is not available to user space applications that the OS can use to speak on its own behalf and to do some public key encryption to actually wrap up this entire request into something that's more meaningful. The other thing we do is we actually resolve the user ID of applications that are in this call chain and the user ID of the application that actually sent this verifiable statement into the public signing keys that they've used in their application. So this is something that's meaningful to the outside world. You can look up the public signing key for this application and say, yes, this is actually PayBuddy. Yes, this is actually my payee app. I can verify that this is correct. So we can actually use the OS private key to sign this and then send it across to this remote PayBuddy service and have a secure RPC system that actually conveys provenance of what happened on the phone to a remote endpoint. So I'm actually going to do a hard context switch here and jump into advertisements. This is something, this is the other application that we actually built on top of Choir. Again, we started in the same way. We wanted to build up the trust issues that we need in a advertisement system that might be running in this new space where we actually split up libraries and applications into separate user ID spaces. So probably the biggest problem now is that we actually need applications to have some notion of sharing the screen rather than being hosted in the same application for an ad provider, or rather than an application hosting an ad provider as a third-party library, it's actually split off. And so we need some mechanism for screen sharing. And my co-authors actually locked themselves in an office for a month to figure this out. So it's very difficult to do. We need a way to delegate clicks. So we need to pass clicks through this the screen sharing system. We need to verify that clicks are real, that they originated from the OS, and that some application higher in this call chain isn't actually trying to emulate this click to me to get me to pay out on an advertisement click or potentially do something malicious. Finally, we need a bit of a way to figure out what the screen state looked like when a click actually happened. So we built this mobile advertisement service in our Choir ecosystem. And we built up this app layering system where we actually have transparent holes in applications that basically form a window into another application that you can point to. So we're building up a view tree where you can say, I'm giving you this little rectangle of a screen, and then you can run your app inside of it. Clicks can be delegated through these view trees back down to the eventual application that's going to get it. And we can actually verify these clicks because the OS is attaching these verifiable statements I talked about to each and every click that's created by the system. So this means that the eventual endpoint of this click, or any click along the chain, can actually verify it and make sure that it originated from the OS rather than some other application. And finally, the Android hardware can generate clicks pretty quickly, on the order of about 100 clicks per second, sometimes more, but it's artificially restricted at this point. And we can actually keep up, even though we're creating these statements for each click, and even if we're verifying everyone, we can still keep up with the hardware sending clicks at us. So all of this was built on the Choir Core implementation, which I've talked about mostly on the left. These are the components that I've discussed throughout the talk. The one asterisk for the intent listeners that were going to call me out on that is that to get the speed we wanted in the SHA-1 HMAC function, we actually implemented this as a Dalvik VM intrinsic function, which calls directly into OpenSSL's implementation for SHA-1 HMAC. So this means that we get a lot of speed as opposed to something like Bouncy Castle, which might take weeks. So just to show you a little bit of a graph here, there's much more of this in the paper, so if you're interested, by all means, go look. But this is our overhead over top of regular Android IPC, and it's about 80 microseconds for each IPC. So this IPC call chain tracking is actually very lightweight, and we can do it with very little overhead to the existing Android IPC infrastructure. So Adrienne hit upon this a little bit as well in her talk, but there's this idea of the future of mobile space and web space are quickly converging. And I think Adrienne's actually taking one of the first steps into combining these and trying to put them together. But there's definitely future work to be done here where we see what web technologies can apply to mobile, what mobile technologies can apply to web, and how we can make them all better. So in conclusion, I've talked about Choir. This system adds provenance and verifiability to IPC and RPC messages on Android. It enables real application separation, not this fake application separation we have now where we have third-party libraries living in the same space as my app. And it allows apps to act more like services that are communicated with over IPC. And we've actually built two interesting implementations of applications built on top of this system. And you can actually do this with very little coding effort because we've hooked into the Android Interface Definition Language Generator to spit out stub code that automatically does this Choir. It uses these Choir systems. Any questions?
Arjun, Brown University. So you started with a great example of what installing Angry Birds looks like when it requests GPS. How do you imagine installation working now on the Choir when you have privilege separated? Do I have to install an ad network myself? And a related question, which is, do you have to worry about running the ad network while my application is closed?
Yeah, so this is an interesting question. We've actually given some thought to what happens when you actually split all these things off. You need to have some dependencies, right? Where I install my application, I say, well, I need to install this ad network as well. So we've actually given some thought to that. We're not quite there yet, but we're looking into how to actually have these applications installed and have dependencies set up as between applications if we're really going to do this. As to your second question, which was, sorry, refresh me.
The second question was, does the ad network shut down when I shut down Angry Birds?
So at this point, we've just built our reference implementation for this, so we haven't really considered these details as far as like battery life as much as just dealing with the pure IPC level things. So we haven't really looked into what would happen when you have these dependencies between applications and how that affects Android's ability to shut things down in the background. So yeah, it's definitely something we need to look into.
So we're like NC State. With the provenance happens on intents. Is that that's the IPC that you're looking at, or is
we're
it
actually
just intents?
So we're hooking into the service binding IPC at this point, which
okay.
is more of what kind of the better structured IPC that the Android operating system actually uses to communicate with, say, the location provider. We haven't done as much work with intents, but everything using binder could potentially work with this.
Paul Pierce, UC Berkeley. Good talk.
Thank you.
Are there any portions of existing ad network or, for that matter, mobile payment system APIs that you are aware that your prototype implementation does not currently support?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
So certain functionality that exists in current ad network SDKs that you're not able to support currently with this prototype implementation?
I'm actually not sure off the top of my head. We're trying to consider this as a system that application developers can use it to build policy on top of. So we're giving them the constructs and then saying, well, go crazy with it. So in some cases it might break ad networks, but I believe that at this point we would break them by splitting them off in their own application to begin with. So okay. I think we have to work from there.
Okay, thank you.
Ask a last question, and I think this convergence of the mobile and the web space is going to lead to lots of interesting things. But one of the things that can happen is the apps running on the smartphone, instead of doing IPC through the phone, can interact with each other using the network in other ways that are not going to be visible to the provenance tracking.
Sure.
So I'm wondering if that's an issue and if there are ways to solve that.
I don't believe it's an issue yet, but as the boundary between a web app and an Android application blurs, I think that could be a very big issue just because, when you're not using the Android constructs that we're giving them to communicate, and you can go out of band to do this communication, then yes, suddenly you can lose track of provenance.
So let's thank our speaker again.
Thank you.